Welcome to Wise and Nice, a true crime podcast with your hosts
Danny Armstrong
and Kelly Lee.
Please remember that we mean no disrespect to anyone mentioned in this episode or across any of the Wise and Nice platforms. We have an interest in true crime and related topics, and whilst we may offer our own personal views on certain items, it is meant to be educational and as light-hearted as possible. The information we present is collated from research gathered from the internet, and we reference and credit our sources wherever possible.
If you've liked what you've heard and want to join in with us, follow us on our socials, Instagram, Wives and Knives the Pod, Twitter, at Knives Wives, and Facebook, Wives and Knives Pod. We also have a little website where we post photographs and other information about the cases that we research. And this is wivesandknives.wixsite.com/my site.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Wives and Knives.
Yes, hello everybody. Hope you're all keeping safe and well out there.
Yeah, definitely. What have you been up to this week, Kelly?
It was sports day on Friday, so that was fun, and my husband did what that woman had done, you know, in the news, and face planted, but didn't moon everybody. He did quite a good commando role, really, but he's still suffering from his injuries.
Fantastic.
That's fine. Oh, my niece stayed over last night. We had a lovely girly night. We watched a horror movie and ate our body weight in non-nutritional snacks, which was good. And I've got an air fryer.
Brilliant.
Amazing. Yeah.
I do not have an air fryer. I am interested.
Oh, honestly, I was telling you, wasn't I? Chicken wings were just, like, I've never tasted, they're so good. They're just
fantastic.
Some magic goes on in that basket.
I do feel that air fryers are getting a lot of appreciation at the moment, and it is luring me in.
Yeah, a few people have been selling them to me, and I've been like, I'm sure it's not that good, but then, yeah, it totally lives up to the hype, so fair. I'll probably fill you in on, you know, further air fryer recipes as I find them. Yeah, that's about it. What about yourself?
I've had a really good week. Got lots done, been out a few times, just been good, enjoying the nicer, hotter weather, to be honest. There's been a few times after work where I've, like, done something that I wouldn't have done if the weather hadn't have been so bloody lovely. So that is great. It's definitely feeling like more like summer, although at the moment it is not, but...
Yeah, we had quite a big thunderstorm yesterday. Did you get one here?
Yeah.
But I feel like it needed it, not to sound like an old lady, but it kind of, like, it was getting a bit too, like, muggy.
Yeah,
so
that is such an old lady thing to say, but I'm exactly like that. And whenever I see the rain, I'm like, oh, it'll be good for the garden.
Yeah,
totally. And just, I was actually discussing this with one of my friends recently. Like, we're doing the things that we never thought we'd do. Like, we're proper excited about, like, gardening and like when you like your plants start to flower, you're like, oh, by the way, my geraniums really kicked off this week. Like, it's actual, like, news.
Yeah, well, I don't know, I'm okay with it, I'm embracing it.
Me too. Like,
yeah,
completely.
I quite like it. I've got a new Hoover as well.
Have you?
And honestly, so, like, again, the husband using the new Hoover, and he was doing it in the hall, so he kept the door shut so as not to scare Mimi, who's doing amazingly. She's super confident, still loving life. And all I could hear was, like, the sound of sexual appreciation of the Hoover, but not, like, using it sexually.
Yeah.
But he was just, like, going, oh, my God. Oh, wow. Oh, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, here we are.
Good suction, lightweight. That's what I think you want, really.
Yeah, pretty much. He's like, look how it moves. It's just effortless.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We're definitely of an age.
Yeah, but, you know, been there, done everything else now. I quite like a quiet weekend with my plants, etc.
Same. I've got a busy weekend next weekend. And although, like, I'm doing things I'm looking forward to, I'm also bracing myself because I'm like, when am I going to get my good sit down?
Yeah, totally.
When am I going to, yeah.
I need to, like, book my hours of sleeping.
Oh, no, it just is what it is.
Because it'll impact too harshly on me if I don't.
Same. I do think there'll be, like, a quota of people listening to this that don't want to listen to like our weekly catch up.
And don't
things like this, and that's absolutely fine. Yeah. Just skip forward the first, say, like 4 or 5 minutes, which is what I do with every podcast with adverts. And if you do like to listen, then just listen. That's yeah. cool. Because I know quite a lot of people that are like my friends in real life that will hear things on this and then think they've had a conversation about it with me. It's quite funny.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with just having a few minutes catch up, personally.
Nah.
I like to know what, you know, my hosts are doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm just sorry that it's not, like, anything mega exciting
for you. No, I feel like the ones that I listen to and they're like, oh, I did this show and I did this and I met this other famous person and I'm like, my geraniums are doing really well.
Yeah.
And I'm constantly checking the weather.
And a cracking hole at the charity shop. That's usually mine, isn't it?
Yeah, I've sold something. Very happy with it.
Well, speaking of our listeners, we have actually got quite a few new listeners and followers. So welcome, everybody. It's nice to have you with us. And as always, thank you to our regulars for sticking with us. It means a whole lot. Like,
thank you to the regulars that listen to the first 5 minutes. And no judgment to those who skip forward it as well.
Absolutely.
Life's too short.
This is a safe space.
It really is.
Well, this week, I think I've got a case that you might not know about.
I'm sure you haven't, because my guesses were clearly way
off. Yeah, it was kind of funny that. So this week we are going to be in Canada, famous for, as you said, maple syrup, moose, is it? What's the plural of moose? Mooses.
Yeah,
what else did you say? Mounties.
Hockey,
yeah.
That's my other association with Canada.
I've never been to Canada.
It's like maple syrup.
Yeah, yeah. And I love maple syrup.
Mooses and hockey.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking, well, it's clearly going to be a crime thing. So Robert Picton. And then the only other crime I could think of off the top of my head associated with Canada was Don't Fuck With Cats, Netflix series. I'm sure... in Canada.
Right.
At some point. I think where he actually committed the murder was Canada.
Okay. Possibly. I'm not sure. But anyway, yeah. So this week I'm going to take you through the case of the Abbotsford Killer. And Abbotsford is a city located in British Columbia. So it's adjacent to the Canadian United States border, Greater Vancouver and the Fraser River. It sounds like a really nice place to live. However, that wasn't the case back in the early 90s, as the area was plagued by a violent killer, one who taunted the police and his victims mercilessly. Dun, dun, dun. So, normally when I do a case, I feel like I always start with a bit of background about the person. But I genuinely can't find out much about this person's childhood, so I'm just going to go straight in to the horrific act. Okay, so on October 13th, 1995, two teenage girls, Tanya Smith, who was 16, and Misty Cockerell, who was 15, they went to a party at a friend's house. And at around 12:30 at night, after the party had ended, the two girls decided that they didn't want to go home just yet, and they decided to walk the short distance to their friend's house, who was also having the party. So as the two girls were walking along Abbotsford Road, which is close to the local hospital, a man suddenly jumped out of the bushes, and he was brandishing like a metal baseball bat.
That's fucking terrifying.
Yeah, it gets worse. And he blocked their way and said, "You bitches want a party?" Probably not in that accent, but...
No.
So the man forced them into the bushes and he ordered them to take off their clothes. Now, both of the girls were clearly terrified of their attacker, and they did what they were told. So Tanya removed her clothes and then he ordered them both to lie on the ground, where he then raped Tanya. Misty, who had been frozen, in shock, fear... was she'd not taken her clothes off, because she literally just stood there absolutely what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
So she somehow like was able to like gather her strength, and she grabbed the baseball bat because he'd put it down, and she picked it up and she started hitting him with it. So she's swinging this baseball bat at him, and she actually hit him in the shoulder. So he got off Tanya and then turned his attention to Misty. So he told her she was going to be sorry and he was going to kill her. So he started fighting with Misty, and he actually managed to get the bat back off her. And then he proceeded to beat Misty in like an excessively vicious and violent attack. Like, he was swinging it at her multiple times until she was unconscious. So with Misty like no longer an issue for him, the attacker continued his assault on Tanya. But what he didn't realise was that Misty had actually survived the beating. And so when she woke up, she was bleeding, she was scared, and she was like really disorientated. But she was able to get herself up, and she immediately started looking for a friend, Tanya. But she couldn't see a friend or the attacker anywhere. Now, knowing that she needed to find help and fast, she started walking to the nearby hospital. So staff on shift that night in the emergency department literally could not believe what they were seeing, because this blood-soaked teenager just turned up at the hospital, and they couldn't believe like the story that she was telling them. So they immediately contacted the police, who began to look for Tanya and the monster who'd attacked the two girls. So for context, I'm just going to take you through Misty's injuries, because it amazes me that she was able to like get herself to hospital and like coherently recount the incident. So Misty had suffered a broken arm, broken finger. She had multiple skull fractures, multiple like lacerations, wounds to her body and her face. And she had a hole the size of a fist in her head. So the doctors like who assessed her later said that the attacker had been taking like quote home run style hits at her. So like he'd just been whacking like the absolute shit out of her. I mean, she was so brave and strong. I find Misty like massively impressive.
Yeah, definitely.
Sadly, however, Tanya was later found dead, like floating face down in the Vedda River. So after he'd actually finished with his attack on Tanya, he'd actually disposed of her in the river, which is a few miles from where they'd actually been attacked. But what makes it so much more horrible is that at her autopsy, the coroners agreed that whilst highly unlikely that Tanya would have survived from her wounds, she had in fact been alive when she was thrown into the river. So her official cause of death was from drowning, which is just so sad. So as you can imagine, the response from the police was swift and extremely focused. Like, a monster was on the loose, and the incident was all over the local news, and the media dubbed him the Abbotsford Killer. But this killer was brazen and didn't wait long before he began taunting the police with calls to like the emergency line.
Oh.
I was going to say 911, and I meant to check this. I'm not sure if it is 911 in Canada.
I'm not sure.
No. Either. Anyway, so yeah, kept ringing the emergency services and basically just taking the piss and like really mocking the police. But the police knew that this wasn't like a joke. Like, they knew it wasn't just some random ringing up, because the caller knew facts, like key facts from the attack, which hadn't been shared with the media. And they even let Misty listen to a few of the calls, and she confirmed that it was the same man who had attacked her. So in the calls, and the transcripts of which are available online, I'll pop them in the sources, he shows absolutely no remorse for what he's done. Like, he boasts about the attacks, he boasts about his intelligence, and he openly mocks the police. But even more worrying is that he also makes threats. So one of the things that he says is, "I'm giving you a chance to try and find me. I'll be cruising around looking for someone else. And just to let you know who I am, Tanya's nipple tasted really good."
Oh.
So that was like one of the things that made the police know it was him, because there had been a bite mark found on Tanya's body, like the attacker had bitten her breast, and that like wasn't shared.
Yeah.
So to specifically say that, they knew that they were dealing with the real thing. So on each call that he made, the caller always hung up before the ended the call, but the police were still able to trace them.
Yeah.
And they traced them to a payphone. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, he'd like scarpered by the time the police showed up. These calls didn't stop, and with each one, like the content or the admissions got like progressively worse. So in a call that was made on Halloween, he actually described exactly what he'd done to Tanya, like in vulgar detail. And he also advised like what he was planning on doing to his next victim. And it like he really goes into explicit detail. It's disgusting. So the call again originated from a payphone. And again, by the time the police arrived, the offender had gone. And the police would later find out that the killer had been watching them from across the street, like enjoying the whole performance.
Yeah.
So despite their best efforts, the police like couldn't seem to find their man. They had a detailed description, they'd heard his voice, but they didn't have anything more substantial. Like there were no fingerprints or other like tying identifiable evidence that they could use to find him. So all of their investigations brought up nothing, and sadly like not the suspect they wanted and needed to lock up. And also at this time there were like warnings like on the news and from the police and everything, you know, advising people to be extra like vigilant because this monster was still around. So that was like nothing really happened. They were still struggling with the case until about 4 months later, when the killer went to the graveyard where Tanya had been laid to rest, and he stole her headstone.
Oh my god.
So he got back on the phone again. But this time, instead of the police, he calls the Abbotsford radio station, and he told them to check a car in the car park. So outside, on the bonnet of a car, was Tanya's headstone. And on it, like on the headstone, was a picture of Tanya, and the killer had drawn a circle on her chest and wrote, "Yummy tit." I mean, who does that? There was also another message written on the stone, and it stated that Tanya was not his first victim and she wouldn't be the last. And chillingly, he added, "One day, Misty," which is fucking terrifying. Like, what an absolute fucking prick. I just find him so, like, I'm not saying killers are respectful, but I feel like he's gone the extra mile to be extremely callous and disrespectful to his victims.
There's no sort of remorse, no acceptance of what he's done.
No, he's revelling in it, and he's revelling in the attention from it as well. Like, I can't stand this guy, genuinely. Anyway, after this despicable display with the headstone, the killer makes a call to the police, asking them cockily if they liked the present that he'd left for them. So a few days later, the police get a call from a local resident, an old lady, and she'd had, I've heard it referred to as a wrench and also pliers, but these have been thrown through her, like the window of her house. And this lady had no connection to the cases, so it was completely random.
Yeah.
But this wrench that had been launched through the window actually had an envelope attached, and inside there was a note, and it was claiming to be from the Abbey killer. So Abbey is being short for Abbotsford. Mm-hmm. So immediately she contacts the police. And the writer of this lengthy letter confessed to the rape and murder of Tanya and the assault on Misty. But the envelope also contained, like, some other things. It had some newspaper clippings. And on one of these newspaper clippings was a picture of Misty. And written across her forehead was, "Lucky to be alive." But the writer also included, like, three chilling assaults in the letter. So one was a 12-year-old girl that had been groped but had managed to get away. The second victim had been attacked from behind and struck in the head, which had knocked her out. And the third victim was found unconscious near the hospital with a life-threatening head injury. and her backpack, which contained $200, was found on the rooftop of a nearby building. So all this information was included in the letter, and the killer was taking responsibility for those. But more interestingly, as well as the letter, were more newspaper clippings, and they regarded the unsolved murders of three women. So the first was Linda Tatry, and she was a sex worker from the local area. Then there was Colleen Shook, who had been attacked getting off a bus, and then Kim Stolberg, who was killed at her father's engineering office in Richmond. So all of these three ladies had been stabbed in 1989, like about 6 years prior to the attack on Tanya and Misty. So again, it was implied that the killer was taking like responsibility for those attacks. But this time, the police got the break that they needed. They found a fingerprint on a piece of tape on the envelope, and the police like decided to go all out now. They were like, let's get this guy. So they went ahead and they released the voice recordings of the phone calls to the public and the wider media. And several members of the same family contacted the police because they recognised the voice. So the first was a guy called Donald Driver, and he called to tell them that he recognised the voice, and quickly followed by, the call was quickly followed by a call from his own mother, Audrey. And Audrey Driver said that along with her other children, were convinced that it was her son, Terry Driver. Now, Terry Driver was 31 years old at the time, and he was married with two small children. And the family said that Terry had been behaving differently, aggressively, and he'd actually told his family some worrying things, and one of which was that he told his sister that he had attended Tanya's funeral, and he'd even taken his two kids with him.
So I know, right? Imagine though, being his mum.
Absolutely horrifying.
Phoning the police and having to admit to yourself as well.
But I mean, admit, like, well done.
Oh God, yeah.
Because I bet there are people out there who wouldn't. So the police, again, very proactive. They quickly arrested Terry and, you know, started to take his statement, etc. And there's quite a few things that didn't add up. His fingerprint matched the one on the tape. They had, you know, an eyewitness, they had Misty, and they had lots of other testimony from his family. So it was all neatly wrapped up for the police. A little sidebar to that, Misty had given a detailed description of the attacker, so they had created an e-fit quite quickly.
Right.
But, I mean, you've got to understand, that's a high, like, octane experience for her, and maybe she'd remembered things differently, but the e-fit didn't really match the description of Terry. So that's possibly why more people haven't come forward. Like you said, oh, this guy fits the description that was given. It's all neatly wrapped up for the police. It goes to, you know, they start preparing trial and everything. But Terry, like, wasn't going to make this easy for them. So he initially clearly denied attacking the girls. Instead, he said that he'd just come across them. So he'd found both the girls lying unconscious on the ground after being attacked by another assailant. So after seeing Tanya naked on the floor, he said that he was unable to resist having sex with her. He said that sometime during the act, she'd stopped breathing, and because he knew that he'd left evidence on the body, he'd panicked and put Tanya's body in his car, along with Misty, who he'd then dropped off at the hospital. He said that then he drove to the Vedder River and threw Tanya's body in. Well, Terry's defence team actually cited that Terry suffered from several disorders, so, and that was like the reasoning behind his actions. So they said that because he had ADHD, OCD and Tourette's syndrome, that he was unable to resist these violent and sexual urges. Well, thankfully, the prosecutors saw right through that, and, you know, it was clear to them that Terry's story was a lie. So the evidence didn't match any of his excuses, and it was like clearly substantiated that Misty had walked to the hospital on her own.
Yeah.
Plus, like, his defence, like, pertaining to his disorders didn't cover, like, the phone calls, the wrench through the window, the letters and the threats to Misty and the wider female population. So Terry's defence team decided that it would be best to do a trial by judge rather than jury, but it didn't really work out for them because the judge found the same as a jury no doubt would, and that was that Terry was guilty. And I have a quote here, and I'm trying to remember the judge's name. It's like Wally something, but I can't remember. And the quote is, "I simply cannot find the words to describe and depict your horrible crimes. You murdered Tanya Smith for your own sexual gratification, and you almost killed Misty Cockerell. They did nothing to provoke you." So Terry Driver was found guilty of the rape and murder of Tanya Smith and for the assault on Misty Cockerell. He was sentenced to life without parole for 25 years. Now, at a later trial, he was found guilty for two other attacks that he had put in the letter that he threw through the window. So those convictions, like, increased, not increased, but cemented the fact that he would have, like, indefinite lifelong incarceration. He did try and appeal the life sentence in 2001, but it was thrown out. It was unsuccessful because, thankfully, again, the judge saw that this guy was really, really dangerous and would no doubt go on to reoffend. So it was completely life in prison. He died of natural causes in prison just last year, in 2021.
Right.
Good.
Yeah. So, definitely.
But what I find amazing is that Misty, as far as I am aware or as I could find out, she still lives in Abbotsford now to this day, and she works as a bereavement counsellor for families of homicide victims.
Wow.
So she's done a lot of
inspiring lady.
Yeah, really. A lot of good incredible work. Yeah.
Did they ever look into the murders in 1989?
Yeah, they looked into everything, basically. Yeah. But as far as I'm aware to this day, they're the only two that he was managed to be convicted of. So perhaps they didn't have enough evidence. Yeah, or
it's been quite a gap.
It is, yeah. Which makes me think, were there more attacks?
Yeah.
But then again, he's so cocky, I feel like he probably would have admitted to them.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure.
I'm glad that he got put away.
Yeah, definitely.
Brought to justice. And absolutely. I'm glad that he's dead.
Yeah, I'm glad he never saw the light of day
again.
And I think it's great. I think Misty is such, like, a role model. You know, she was really brave. Yeah. She tried everything she could to save a friend. You know, she helped herself. Just, yeah, top notch, really impressive young lady. So, yeah, and like I say, really sad though that I couldn't find out much about his childhood. Like, I know that he grew up with several siblings. Mm-hmm. From what I can garner, quite a normal.
Yeah.
I can't find anything that would perhaps, you know, indicate that this was going to happen.
No, and obviously, like, his family were appalled enough at his behaviour to contact the police and stuff like that. It wasn't as if...
I feel like they were slightly scared of him as well. His brother made a comment along the lines of, I think Terry had said to him, like, "You don't want to push me, I'm not who you think I am," you know, that type of, like, quite threatening. So they were, I think, that just all connected for them. But yeah, like we said, I feel like there are some people who would have just maybe helped cover that up, you know, because it's family. But I think it's much more impressive that they didn't, and they, you know. So yeah, I think that he is the Abbotsford killer is an absolute piece of shit though.
Yeah, definitely. And
it's quite, you know, it's very well known in Canada, but it's not, like, I don't really hear much about it.
No, so I've never heard of it. How did you hear of it?
Yeah, I was just, I think I saw, like, a little, maybe like a clipping about it while I was researching another case, and then I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it kind of
and I went off on a tangent and just, you know, how you just get a bit absorbed into it, and I was just so impressed by Misty
yeah.
as well. So yeah, so I hope you've enjoyed that.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Very welcome. There are loads, I'll put all the links and the sources, but there are quite a lot of articles about this, and quite a few videos on YouTube. So if you want to do a bit more of a deep dive into it, you can do.
Definitely. Thank you, Kelly.
You're very welcome. So we'll be back next week with something amazing as usual. We'll let you know what that is. You can be as surprised as we are.
Yep.
Until then, just look after yourselves and stay safe.
Bye.